Hello, my name is Brian Novoselsky, and welcome to the Over the Counter podcast. Today, we're joined by Morgan Lee and Scott Halperin. Morgan is the Senior Director of Research and Strategy with the Pharmaceutical Strategies Group, or PSG, with over 15 years of experience in research, while Scott is a Senior Pharmacy Benefit Clinical Consultant of Employer Groups at PSG with over 20 years of experience in pharmacy. Welcome, and thank you so much for joining me today.
Thanks for having us.
So today we're going to be discussing PSG's 2025 Trends in Drug Benefit Design Report. More specifically, Morgan and Scott will be touching on the report's key takeaways and how they might impact the pharmacy industry. So to start, can you explain the importance of the report and of drug benefit design as a whole? Basically, who are the major entities that have significant roles within the creation of drug benefits?
Sure thing. I can take the first part of that. So drug benefit design is really important here in this moment where we're seeing increasing drug trend and drug trend kind of outpacing overall trend in medical costs. And we find in our report that payers are putting a whole lot of priority and emphasis on their drug benefit design. We have actually been conducting research on drug benefit design for decades. This report was first published in 1995, and we've been at it ever since. We also have three other major market research reports that we conduct each year. So it's a real passion project for us, and we see a lot of importance in the current environment.
Yeah, and you know, Brian, Morgan, the real players in the creation of drug benefits, we see health plans, we see employers, we see labor union clients. Really, leaders in those sectors are the ones driving the changes and the innovation in the drug benefit space.
Awesome, definitely, yeah. So obviously, it's touching a lot of players within kind of healthcare and insurance, and obviously, more, like you said, Morgan, with the drug expenditures. Obviously, this is a very important topic right now. So diving into the report, touching on one topic, obviously there's a lot that goes into it, but I wanted to talk about PBM unbundling. So what is PBM unbundling? Why is it gaining traction now? And what does it mean for pharmacies?
It's really carving out the core functions of the PBM. So we talk about the core functions of a PBM. It's adjudicating the claim. It's providing network contracts. It's you know, coordinating between the mail order or home delivery vendor, the specialty vendor, and then it's collecting rebates or aggregating rebates with the pharmaceutical manufacturers. So why is it gaining traction now? Well, plans today are really seeking additional flexibility in administering their plan. Perhaps they want to drive toward, you know, an in-house pharmacy like we see with many hospital systems, or just really looking to gain more transparency into where their spend is going.
Yeah, and I'll jump in and say it's really interesting that we saw this first really in the health plan space, but in this year's report, we found quite a bit of interest among employers as well. And that may look like different flavors, right? Employers may not be ready to fully unbundle, but they may look at carving out certain pieces of that solution. But in the report, we found very high interest and perceived value of that unbundling approach. And transparency was one of the main benefits that payers felt that they could get from this approach. So I think that was really interesting.
Kind of staying on that PBM route, and then we're going to move around a little bit. Really kind of want to touch on the key takeaways of the report as a whole. But with the PBMs and the unbundling, you also mentioned alternative PBM pricing models. So what are some examples of alternative PBM pricing models right now? And how do you see the role of these new models evolving in the near future?
I could take that one, Brian. So, you know, we see a couple different pricing models currently out here in the market. First one is really, you know, cost plus pricing. So, you know, typically when we think of PBM pricing models, we think of spread pricing. Plan pays to the PBM is different than the amount that the PBM collects from the pharmacy. So now we're seeing, you know, really the markup tied to a fixed fee. We're also seeing pass-through pricing, right? So, you know, where there is no spread being charged to the plan from the PBM. We're also seeing, in addition, we're seeing things called a PMPM pricing guarantee. So, you know, really, and these are for plans that are looking for more clarity. They're looking for, you know, more guarantees with their spend and trend. And so we're seeing some PBMs come to the table with a PMPM per member per month trend guarantee out there in the market.
Yeah. And I'll say that we are already seeing quite a bit of engagement with pass-through pricing, but we're also starting to see quite a few payers who are evaluating cost-plus or PMPM pricing guarantees. So I think it'll be interesting to see how that continues to move in the future. It does seem like we'll continue seeing engagement there. And Scott, I think you're seeing this with clients as well, that leaning toward a continued evaluation and perhaps use of these models.
Yeah, you know, a lot of it has to do with the state and federal legislation that is coming down, you know, depends on the state that you're in, right? And we have clients that run multi-state ERISA plans. But, you know, some of these states are banning, you know, the traditional pricing or spread pricing model. That is leading, you know, clients, payers to really look at more of the pass-through model or an acquisition or cost-plus model that really future-proofs their benefit.
Also, yeah, definitely agree. Obviously, with kind of everything that's going on, a lot of the alternative pricing models that you've mentioned are some of them are a little more well-known to the general public. Others are pretty much just emerging right now. So it's interesting to see how dynamic kind of these models are right now. So moving aside a little bit, kind of touching on one of the bigger drugs within your report. So of all the drugs dispensed at pharmacies and placed on formularies, glucagon-like peptide 1 medications or GLP-1s have been given a spotlight in recent history because of their impact on patients with obesity and many other indications. Can you summarize what the rise in GLP-1 use means for benefit design?
I can start us off there, and then I know Scott will have additional insights to share. It's meant a lot of complexity, for one, right? You're having to make decisions now with respect to coverage and then constraints around that coverage for GLP-1s for type 2 diabetes, and then similar decisions around GLP-1s for obesity. And in our report, we're finding that nearly all payers are covering those GLP-1s for type 2 diabetes. They're having to put some constraints in place to ensure appropriate use because there's a lot of concern around off-label use of those drugs. And we see that in our respondents in the report. Smaller percentages of payers are currently covering GLP-1s for obesity. And if they do, they're putting in place constraints such as prior authorization, BMI requirements, and such. So it's really interesting to see kind of the disparity between coverage for those two and looking at the size of the patient population. Payers have a lot of complex decisions to make in this space. And you can see there are even some payers who have previously covered GLP-1s for obesity and are having to pull back on that coverage. So there's a lot moving right now as they're making those decisions and finding the right appropriate, I'll say, controls in place so that they can keep that spend under control.
You know, GLP-1's really been a once-in-a-lifetime moment for our payer clients. You know, for years, we've seen, you know, the focus has been on specialty drug management. And now we're seeing huge, you know, rise in non-specialty drug management, non-specialty drug costs. And I think that, you know, GLP-1's has really been the intersection of costs and utilization, right? These drugs, we know from a list price perspective, you know, over $1,000 per month. And, you know, when we think about obesity, you know, potentially half of our country has obesity. So we have a real potential to increase costs. And, you know, our payers, they all have budgets to manage too, right? And so, you know, that it's been a huge concern. Our clients have been really forced to take a look more at tools like Morgan mentioned, whether it's utilization management, prior authorization, you know, ways to ensure that the member gets the right drug at the right time, they're able to manage the side effects and you know, maintain proper adherence. You know, from managing obesity, we're also seeing, you know, new drug cost sharing tiers come down. So, you know, where we previously saw, you know, potentially an additional tier for drugs like fertility, now we're seeing some payers put obesity drugs on a separate tier all in itself. And that's really with the goal, you know, trying to manage those costs.
The rise in GLP-1s, obviously, that's probably not going away anytime soon. But next to all this complexity, do you kind of anticipate as more people understand how much these drugs are being used and spent on, that complexity will kind of like go away?
Yeah, you know, I think bad news. I don't think so, right? I think if anything, it's really becoming more complex. You know, GLP-1s, you know, we know we've really seen up to this point, GLP-1s, the focus has been on any kind of metabolic syndrome, right? You know, came to the market over 20 years ago now, right, for diabetes. You know, we saw, you know, with Ozempic and Mounjaro, really how effective they are, not only for diabetes, but for weight loss. And then with that, we saw your Wegovy and your Zepbound come to market. You know, now we're seeing GLP-1s being studied in other conditions that are, you know, beyond metabolic syndrome, right? We're seeing them being studied in conditions like Alzheimer's, in conditions like addiction, right? And so, you know, I think we're already at the point where many in the medical community accept obesity as a medical condition, not necessarily a lifestyle. You know, I think looking at, you know, some of these other conditions, it becomes even more complex, right? Because, you know, while we all hope the costs to come down, that's not the reality of the world we live in right now. And, you know, we think about where the future is going. Certainly these other conditions, these other, you know, either whether they're downstream from obesity or they're completely new treatments for GLP-1s or new conditions for GLP-1s, you know, it adds complexity for payers.
I would just add as well that the incredibly high level of awareness among the general population of these drugs is unique as well and adds complexity in that respect, that you're going to have a lot more sort of pressure around your coverage of these drugs and a lot more awareness of that than you might in some other categories because these GLP-1s are so widely known in the general population.
Awesome. Yeah, I appreciate you clearing that out. So really, it's just like the more these GLP-1s are developed and kind of studied research, it's really just the payers and the benefit designers really having to keep up with all of that. Awesome. So kind of wanted to look ahead for these last few questions. So based on the 2025 report, what are some of the biggest things that pharmacists specifically should be looking out for?
I can kick us off with that. One of the things we haven't highlighted too much yet that was a major finding in the report was that 70% of payers are actually considering changes to their cost-sharing arrangements. There's lots of different flavors of that, but the most common changes that we saw were things like potentially increasing copays or coinsurance amounts or increasing the deductible, things that would actually shift some additional cost sharing to members. And I do want to emphasize this isn't just payers wanting to shove all those costs off to members. It's that they're experiencing tremendous trend as well and trying to kind of figure out how to make it all work and still provide a solid and affordable benefit. But I think that that's sort of a really remarkable trend. And I wonder if Scott, from a pharmacist's perspective, if you could talk a little bit more about what the impact might be.
Yeah, thanks, Morgan. You know, I remember being the pharmacist behind the counter, right? And I think, you know, when we talk about increased costs and you know, what the end member sees there, what the pharmacist sees at the counter, you know, it's a challenge, right? That's a pretty jarring number. 70% of plans are considering cost sharing changes, and that could come in the form of increased copays, increased coinsurances, increased deductibles, as we mentioned, you know, potentially a separate tier for lifestyle drugs, potentially preferred networks, right? So, you know, that all adds complexity to the pharmacist job behind the counter, which is really decoding this and being, you know, a frontline healthcare provider and trying to explain this benefit, you know, to members. And, you know, as members are just seeking to get their drugs. As costs rise, we have things like the IRA, you know, come out, you know, new laws increasing, you know, while we've capped the max out of pocket, again, you know, plans have been looking to increase that cost sharing. And it creates a challenge for all those pharmacists, you know, working the counter and really just end goal trying to provide, you know, patients their medications at an affordable cost.
I think this has been a great conversation. Obviously, we could sit here and talk for hours about this report and its importance, but I kind of just want to look ahead. And how do you guys expect the current trends in the report to change, say, at the end of this year, the start of next year, or kind of beyond? Basically, like, what do you expect in the near future based on previous reports, this report?
Talk about things we could talk about for hours. You know, one thing that I would just highlight is back to those alternative pricing models. I do think we'll continue to see engagement with those, more payers, at least evaluating whether they might be a good fit for their organization. There's a lot of talking about complexity, a lot of complexity to work through there to see if one of these pricing models would be more appropriate for your organization. That I do think that we'll continue to see more engagement there. And some of that is coming as there is this continued call for transparency in the industry. And that's something I'll just give a quick plug for our next report, or our final report, I should say, of report season coming out this fall is our PBM customer satisfaction report. We really dig into some of those themes around the desire for transparency, where transparency may be doing okay or may be lacking in some ways. And just seeing that as a continued theme, I think that will keep going through 2026 and well beyond.
Yeah, I mean, as far as utilization goes, you know, we expect GLP-1 utilization to continue to be high, you know, really no matter the guardrails that the payers or plans put in place. You know, we're seeing double-digit trends, you know, across the book when it comes to GLP-1s. I know not all diabetics who are eligible are receiving a GLP-1, and even those, you know, who may make their plan may cover, you know, obesity treatment, not all who are eligible are receiving. So, you know, we are hoping to see costs come down. We've seen a couple of PBMs announce in the last month or two, but we also know, you know, these expanded indications are going to continue to be factors, and, you know, things like drug advertising, right? We know that the demand is going to continue to increase. And, you know, we always joke we can't go through a single meeting without mentioning a GLP-1. And the next time that we do will be probably the first time in many, many years. And so we expect, you know, GLP-1s to continue to be a hot topic, at least, you know, through the end of the decade and beyond.
Well, awesome. That's all I have for you guys. I really appreciate you taking the time for both of you to join me and really provide both your insights on either end of research and pharmacy. We'll definitely be keeping an eye on the trends now, kind of how they're going to change in the future, and any reports that you guys have coming up to keep our audience informed. So thank you guys so much for joining me.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.